Welcome to That's History, our regular exploration of current events and their echoes, parallels, and connections to the past. This is Chris Sutulo, joined as always by Dr. Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
So the news has been full of updates, reports on the manhunt for one Eric Freen, the suspect in the assassination, essentially, of a Pennsylvania state trooper up in the Poconos a couple of weeks ago. And one aspect of the chatter about him and his background that has caught your attention as a historian is his status as a war reenactor. What's been the chatter on the blogs, and what strikes you as off about it?
Well, it's been really interesting. Before this detail came out, what we knew about Eric Freen was that he was this anti-government extremist. That was the story for about a week until it was reported that he had been a reenactor for a long time. And then the chatter changed, and he became one of these war nuts, these losers that waste their time and money buying this old equipment and gear and spending their weekends reenacting battles.
Yeah, and I think part of the interest or the sense that he was really a freak was what war he chose to reenact and what role he played.
Yeah, well, interestingly, Freen, like a lot of military reenactors, participated in many different units in many different, quote, wars of the past, including Vietnam ones. But the most recent interest of his was in Serbian military history, particularly the battles in the 1990s. And he took on a Serbian name, we're told, and he even went so far as to smoke Serbian cigarettes and to teach himself several Slavic languages.
Hmm. At what point does a war become meat for reenactors? It seems awfully recent to be doing that.
I think the answer is reenactors are getting more and more recent in their choices, and it's fueled by a few things. First of all, the internet, which has created this incredible line of communication between people, but also trade in regalia and guns and other tangible effects of the war, which are easier to obtain the more recent the war is.
So there's a sense then in this rhetoric, at least in the blogosphere and some of the news coverage, that reenactors they're worse than just history nerds. They're just kind of strange, or they're warped people. And that sets you off a little bit.
Very much so, because if you actually look at the facts and if you look at the books that have been written, there are several about this phenomenon. It turns out that the people who participate in this are very middle-of-the-road Americans. They're not outcasts like Eric Freen clearly was. They're not unemployed like he was. These are people who mostly have middle-class lives and jobs and wages, and this is their hobby. Other than this hobby, there doesn't seem to be anything particular or out of the norm about them.
Right. So your profession is history. I'm just wondering what relationship you sort of feel you have as an historian and a writer of history books with these people who have a sort of different way of encountering and experiencing history.
Well, I should tell you that for most of my colleagues, and frankly for me before I studied up on them, these war reenactors led to some big eye rolls because they seem to think they can really be there. And perhaps they don't reality test very well. But when I taught myself more about them, I found out a few things. I found out that, first of all, they separate reality and fantasy very well. There have been some mentally unstable people in the enterprise, like there are everywhere, but they're the exception. But two other things struck me as joining them to me in a way. First of all, that what they're really interested in is the everyday experience of people in the past rather than the famous people. I came of age studying history, going to grad school in the late 80s and early 90s when something called the new social history was brought on the land. And the idea was we shouldn't just study people with names like Jefferson and Lincoln or Nixon. We should be trying to understand what history was like for people that aren't famous.
Right.
And that's really the emphasis of these folks. It's to try to understand what they call the grunt, the everyday soldier. And also to imagine what life was like for that soldier. And the other thing I have in common with these people is I also engage in acts of imagination. I think that that's what my colleagues often don't acknowledge. All history is an act of imagination. I did not live in the times that I chronicle. And what I try to do is gather as much evidence as I can to try to imagine what life is like then. That's what these people are doing, too, through a different medium.
Right. So you have that link of concentrating on history from the bottom, as it's called. You do it as a professional. They do it as an avocation. What do you learn from trying to experience history from the bottom that might not be available to somebody who thinks of history as the great deeds of great men and women?
Well, I think there are a couple things. I think that the most important is what you get from history from the bottom up and what you get from social history writ large is a sense of how the decisions of leaders that we've chronicled so well actually affected or not the ways that human beings lived. So the idea was, instead of studying presidents and the laws they sign and legislatures and the laws they make, try to look at how people actually experienced the effect of things like that. And with war, it's the same. Instead of looking at Napoleon and looking at George Washington, obviously they made decisions with enormous ramifications, but we can't understand those decisions and we can't understand the course of history unless we look at the everyday actors who were enjoined with executing them and often avoiding them, otherwise addressing them.
We're talking about reenactors and their connections to the work of professional historians with Jonathan Zimmerman, himself a professional historian at New York University. Jonathan, one other aspect of Eric Frein's involvement in reenactment, and we touched on it earlier, but I'd like to return to it. You mentioned that he was very interested in playing the role of a specific Serbian soldier from the wars around the breakup of Yugoslavia. Generally speaking, I don't think most Americans regard the Serbs as the heroes of that particular conflict. Talk a little bit about that aspect of it. You know, the most common reenactments are obviously Civil War, and some people play Southern soldiers. In World War II reenactments, somebody has to play the Nazi soldiers, and other outside observers then have a problem with that.
Absolutely. And indeed, this is the most controversial aspect of the whole enterprise. It turns out that among the Civil War reenactors, the majority of people in the North who participate in those reenactments play Confederates. And I think that tells you something. I think it tells you that for the vast majority of people, they don't assume the philosophy of the soldier whose uniform they're wearing. There are exceptions to that, absolutely. And you see that. You see that there are some people wearing German uniforms that really are neo-Nazis, and there are some people wearing Confederate uniforms that really are apologists for the Confederate South. But they're a minority. I think it's important when you look at the websites of these groups, they're often extremely explicit on this point. You know, the World War II websites say, now listen, if you're somebody that really likes the Nazis, we don't want you. We know that people did fight and die to protect it, and we're trying to understand that, but that doesn't mean we embrace it.
Right. I attended and did some news coverage for WHYY of the massive reenactment of the Battle of Gettysburg on the anniversary last July. Had a chance to talk to and see some of the reenactors. And what struck me most was how serious they were about being accurate and, as you say, living it from the bottom. And it's much more, the event is much more than marching around a field, shooting guns and pretending to fall down dead. It's about reenacting the sort of humdrum routines of camp and actually living off the land in the way that the soldiers did.
Exactly, and experiencing the physicality of it. And I think that's a really key element of the whole experience. You know, you read about these reenactors, and one of the things they say is if you read about a battle, you might understand the troop locations and the maneuvers and even, you know, the amount of violence and death. But what you can experience is what you were calling the humdrum or the everyday challenges and obstacles involved in marching a very long distance carrying 60 pounds of gear. That's actually what soldiers had to do. And I think it probably is quite difficult to really understand it unless you've experienced it. And I expect that these reenactors have a certain kind of perspective and understanding that I don't have.
I will confess to being a full-bore Civil War geek, but most of my geekiness has been involved in reading books and visiting battlefields. It's the first time I'd been to a major reenactment. And I found it somewhat disappointing, but one aspect of the disappointment was instructive. It was simply once they started firing cannon and all the level of sound and the amount of smoke on the field, you literally can't see anything. Yeah. But it really did make tangible, visible for me, that phrase, the fog of war. You know, it sometimes in military history can seem all too neat. Well, this regiment moved over. People are stumbling around in the dark and the smoke and the noise, and they have no idea what's happening.
Yes. I mean, the raw confusion, the fear, the lack of organization. I think all those things are things you do see in reenactments.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about reenactments and its connection to history from the bottom with Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was fun.